It's likely not a coincidence that you're here looking for effective information about the low-carb or ketogenic lifestyles or a carnivorous lifestyle. Are you looking for trustworthy information on healthy nutrition, weight loss, general health questions, balancing your hormones, or living a longer, fuller, or more abundant life? Even men and women at the peak of health find themselves wondering if there's more to life beyond the mirror, the scale, the stress test, the colonoscopy, or the lab test. Whether you're looking for more meaning in your life, increasing your confidence, your ability to make a bigger impact, improving healthy relationships, improving your wealth, experiencing deeper and more meaningful love, or even creating a powerful lasting legacy. Find out how amazing your life can be on this episode of Doc Talk with Dr. Adam Nally. Listen and learn as we take complex health topics and make them clear, understandable, and applicable to your life. My desire is that you find the answers to the burning questions you have, answers that will get you back on track, improve your health, and let you be who you were meant to be. Whatever your reason, thank you for being here. I'm so glad you're joining me today. If you have a question that you'd like discussed on Doc Talk, I'd love to answer it. I cannot give individual advice or recommendations, but we can answer the question in an educational format and give you some tools to make educated decisions about your health. If you have a question, email it to questions@docmuscles.com. Again, that's questions@docmuscles.com, docmuscles.com. If you're interested in more personal instruction and information on any of the topics discussed here, go to docmuscles.com/membership to learn more and sign up to be a part of my health and coaching services. It only takes a couple of minutes to learn more about your health. Again, that's docmuscles.com/membership. Enjoy the episode of Doc Talk with me, Dr. Adam Nally. Welcome to episode 3, Gout, the King's Disease. I'm frequently asked for health advice by family and friends, and I was recently asked about gout by a friend who was suffering from an acute flare-up. I was reminded of the story of an old cowboy who was asked about living a long life by his grandson. This cowboy told his grandson that the secret to life was, quote, sprinkling a little gunpowder on your eggs every morning. If you do this, he said to his grandson, you'll live to a ripe old age. So the grandson, trusting his grandfather and wanting to live the cowboy life, followed his grandfather's advice and religiously every single day did exactly what he said. Sure enough, he lived to the ripe old age of 96. And when he died, he left behind 4 children, 8 grandchildren, 15 great-grandchildren, and a 30-foot hole in the wall of the crematorium. The moral of that story is only about 50% of what you hear for health advice might actually be helpful. And unfortunately, that was what I learned in medical school. Well, we are here on episode 3 to talk about the history of gout, the king's disease. In 2640 BC, the Egyptians were the very first people to recognize gout as a disease, and by the 5th century BC, Hippocrates recognized its debilitating nature and called it the unwalkable disease. Hippocrates would often use aphorisms, many of which still ring true today. About 2,000 years ago, Aratius of Capodica, a physician, described the symptoms of gout quite aptly as, quote, hot needles being slowly pushed into your flesh. Every step is an agony, and the weight of a simple bed sheet is literally unbearable. Hippocrates referred to gout as, quote, the arthritis of the rich, or the king's disease, because he believed it only occurred in the affluent, it fell prey to it. Gout was often a result of the upper-class society's overindulgence in the diets of meat and alcohol. It certainly isn't hard to see why he came to such a conclusion. It was seen that way, essentially. The reality of the disease is that it's a very painful condition caused by excessive uric acid accumulation in the joints that create these needle-like shards within the tissues of often the synovial joints, the joints between bones. They can essentially happen to anyone, regardless of socioeconomic status. The Roman surgeon Galen was the first to identify tophi, which are these formations of tissue on top of the joint, as crystallized chunks of uric acid or monosodium urate that form around the joints, causing pain and swelling in patients who have chronic gout. Podagra, a manifestation of gout, was first used by a Dominican monk named Rodolphus of Bocking in 1200 AD. In Greek, pod means foot, while agra means, or translated into seizure, or to take. The term also has Latin roots with the word gutta, translating into drop. It was so named because the medieval belief that when one of their 4 humors were imbalanced, a concept that was rooted in Shakespearean cosmology, the imbalance would cause one of them to drop into a joint. So the humor would drop into a joint. So podagra or drop foot occurred that way. In fact, in the 1900s, it was acceptable to suffer from gout because it essentially labeled you as socially and politically affluent, as a powerful figure in society. This elevated uric acid level is also the second most common cause of kidney stones that we see today. We'll do a whole podcast about kidney stones later, so we won't dive into that part, but I want you to understand the importance of uric acid here. Today, the diagnosis of gout is made by lab tests and often confirmed by x-ray. Gout's caused by, as I said before, monosodium urate crystals in the joints, in the bones, and in the soft tissues. And gout is confirmed, when necessary, by seeing these crystals under a polarized microscope. It can occur in three types: acute arthritis, or gouty flare; chronic arthritis, which is chronic gouty arthritis; or tophi, or tophaceous gout. These uric acid crystals deposit and collect in the wrists, the fingers, the big toes, the knees, causing these areas to swell up and become horribly painful. As of 2017, there were, to our count, 41.2 million cases of gout reported and 1.3 million people suffering from chronic gout around the world as the cause of their disability. For years, a flare of gout was thought to occur mainly because of high purine intake in red meat, pork, and alcohol. However, what we now know, well, those of us in the low-carb world know, that it actually isn't the meat. It's the processing of the fructose, the high-fructose corn syrup, or the alcohol in the liver that drives the formation of uric acid. Elevated uric acid in the blood, which doctors refer to as hyperuricemia, hyper meaning high and uricemia meaning uric acid in the blood, is usually defined in the literature as a uric acid level greater than 6.8 milligrams per deciliter. However, I commonly see gout attacks where the uric acid is greater than 6.0 milligrams per deciliter. The formation of gout crystals in the joint tissues can be driven by a number of complex mechanisms. There's essentially five of them. One is metabolic causes, where you have an increased production of uric acid. Middle-aged or older men and postmenopausal women will often experience this because the estrogen dominance has an effect on the production of uric acid, has an increased effect on it. Second is the physiologic causes. This would be changes in the synovial fluid, where the pH changes, or water concentration or electrolyte levels can change, and there's a change in proteoglycan or collagen concentration in the tissues. Third cause can be cellular and solubility causes. It's often related to temperature. Fourth is immune modulation. We're finding that the incretin release from the immune cells that are found in the joint spaces are a driver for the inflammation and for the crystal formation in regards to its the immune modulation that occurs. Number five is going to be the chronic inflammatory process that occurs generally with irritation or these crystals literally poking the tissues or jabbing into those joint spaces. So there's this inflammation that occurs from that perspective. Hyperuricemia, or high uric acid in the blood, is required for gout, but not everyone who has elevated uric acid levels will actually form gout. Garrod, one of the researchers, proposed that the crystals, he proposed the crystal deposition theory in 1863 in London. Friedwilder established in 1899 that injection of a tophaceous region, where these chronic collections of urate were found in soft tissues around the joints, caused increased inflammation, supporting the validity that gout is a crystal deposition disease. And in 1961, the crystals were actually identified on microscopy or under microscope when they looked at the synovial fluid of patients who were having a flare-up that was acute. It later followed that when we injected these crystals into normal tissue, that they would actually have a gout flare as well. That was also, that sounds like fun, doesn't it? Here, let me give you these crystals. We're going to shoot them in your joint and see if you swell up. I would not want to be the person receiving that. The things you could do back in 1961 just amazed me. Interestingly enough, two studies, one with coffee and one with smoking, showed that coffee intake and cigarette smoking decreased the incidence of gout. However, there's no specific conclusive evidence in any other studies to confirm these findings, so take that with a grain of salt. Higher levels of uric acid in the blood are clearly associated with a greater risk for developing gout. So as your uric acid is creeping up over 6, your risk is much higher. But again, not necessarily more severe gout. Obesity and ethanol ingestion further increase the risk for gout at any given level of hyperuricemia. So what that means is that if you're overweight or you're drinking alcohol, because of the obesity causing high incretin levels generally due to the fat cells producing these inflammatory hormones like interleukin 1, interleukin 6, interleukin 8, and alcohol increasing the production of uric acid as it's metabolized in the liver, you're more likely to see gout occur. Among people who have established history of gout, consumption of alcohol or intermittent use of diuretics appears to acutely increase the risk of a gout flare. So if you drink alcohol and you get dehydrated, essentially that's what's going to, that's almost a ticking time bomb, essentially. The solubility of monosodium urate, meaning how the crystal actually, whether it stays in liquid or it crystallizes, is clearly associated with a greater risk. When the temperature drops. So as the joint gets cold, you're more likely to crystallize in that joint space. It explains in part why it occurs at the peripheral joints away from the body as the temperature gets lower and lower as you get further away from the heart. So you have the concentration of uric acid. The challenge is that as the level goes up, your risk for formation is higher. As the temperature falls, your risk for formation is higher. Then we use a term called nucleation and growth of the crystals, and those can be driven by the presence of, as albumin and the globulins and type 1 collagen diminish in the presence of the synovial fluid, the likelihood of the formation of crystals goes up. And so those are the three kind of factors that play a role with the crystal formation. Now, as I implied to earlier, interleukin 1, interleukin 6, interleukin 8, and tumor necrosis factor are all involved in an acute form of gout. These are called incretin hormones, and amazingly, as the fat cells get bigger and sicker, they produce these hormones at a greater degree. It's interleukin 6 and 8 and tumor necrosis factor alpha that actually inhibit the signal of insulin coming from the pancreas to the liver, and that's really the driver as to the insulin level staying high when a person's insulin resistant. It as the fat cells shrink, that insulin level falls, but with a ketogenic diet, it takes about 2 years for that to happen, as I've implied in previous podcasts. And so if your insulin level is high, your risk for these incretins being higher is present, and that increases the potential risk of gout formation. So that's where the obesity plays a role there. Elevated levels of leptin are also have been shown to increase the concentration of uric acid in the blood. I'm going to put the references to these studies in the show notes so you can look at them if you're wanting to get really excited about reading these articles. But leptin, which is leptin resistance, which is often found 50% of the time in somebody who's insulin resistant, plays a significant role in the presence of uric acid in going up and gout formation. It's interesting that high carbs and in the presence of high triglycerides, which is the classic presentation of most of my diabetics, also is the key for leptin resistance and leptin elevation. Now, hypertension is a known risk factor for gout, because the high blood pressure decreases the excretion of uric acid at the kidney filtration system. As the pressure goes up, the ability for the filter at the glomerulus at the kidney to filter that uric acid diminishes. So there's this vicious cycle that occurs. As you're diabetic, as you gain weight, and as your blood pressure goes up, your likelihood for gout dramatically rises. A gouty tophus, which is this collection of gouty material outside the soft tissues of the joint, what we call granulomatous tissue that surrounds it, it occurs when the joint's chronically inflamed. Types of immunity, both innate and adaptive immunity, play a role in this. For those interested in the immune system and how it plays a role, there's a whole bunch of literature on the immune system and the two different immune systems and their role they play. And I won't dive into that here. The gist of this whole issue is that the tophi that are created contribute to bony erosion and joint damage in the patient who's got gout and can lead to significant problems with the joint itself. Amazingly, what I've found over the last 22 years is that a ketogenic and carnivorous diet is really the only truly effective way to lower the uric acid level below 6. There's a bunch of great drugs that are out there, but they don't fully do the job, and that's what I found. And that's why when you see more and more drugs start to arise for a disease process, you realize that most of them aren't fully effective. Something to realize about the pharmaceuticals that we use. Although we use them, and I use a number of them to help patients, the challenge is that I see the greatest effect when you actually just literally cut out the carbs and the alcohol and the fruit and the fruit juice and the other components that drive formation of uric acid. Monk fruit being one of those, just to give you a little flag there. I still see uric acid up with monk fruit because it is a form of a fructose that's metabolized in the liver. Avoiding fructose itself and alcohol play a dramatic role in lowering uric acid level. Uric acid is a byproduct of, like I said, hepatic metabolism. So as fructose-like products and alcohol are metabolized in the liver, the byproduct is uric acid, and then you increase your risk there for gout. Losing weight and maintaining good hydration is a key here. So you cut the carbs back, you lose weight, you maintain good hydration. In an acute attack, I find that colchicine is the most effective. Now, we've got some medications that prevent and lower the uric acid levels, the oldest one being allopurinol. So there's some others, and I won't go into them with the brand names of those, but they are effective in prevention. But what, especially with allopurinol, if you have an acute gouty attack, you need to stop the allopurinol, talk to your doctor about a medicine to calm it down, because in an acute attack, the allopurinol will actually make the gout worse. Vitamin C has been shown to increase the renal excretion of uric acid, so use of vitamin C on a daily basis if you have high uric acid levels and you're insulin resistant is one of the things I highly recommend because of that. Several anti-inflammatory and pain medications are on the market that help alleviate the crippling effect of gout. In ancient Greece, the Byzantine physician Alexander of Tralles used colchicine as a plant extract that he derived from the autumn crocus, which is essentially a flower that is used to treat gout. These really pretty flowering plants are referred to as, quote, naked ladies when they bloom early in the fall because they bloom, but they don't have any leaves. The green leaves don't show up until later in the spring, and then they die off by the early summer. It wasn't used for several years until it resurfaced again in the mid-1700s, and Baron Anton de Stork, an Austrian physician, rediscovered its therapeutic properties. It's interesting because rabbits and deers avoid eating these flowers because they're essentially toxic to animals and humans unless you extract the colchicine out of them. So it's kind of amazing that we use a plant that'll kill you to take care of your gout. It's much easier to stop eating carbs. that's at least my perspective. George Hitchens and Gertrude Elion discovered allopurinol. They actually got the Nobel Prize for this because this is essentially the first xanthine oxidase inhibitor that slows that production of uric acid in the liver. And they received the Nobel Prize in 1988 over this work, which is pretty cool to understand that pathway. But I've found that, you know, just restricting carbs really is the most efficient way to do it. Now, if I have a patient that still has a higher uric acid level because of other factors, then we will add on medications as well. But high alcohol, high fructose corn syrup, sugary snacks, these are essentially the driver for uric acid production. So there is your history of the King's disease and how to treat it with a ketogenic or carnivorous diet. I'll end with this thought. Don't wait for things to get easier, simpler, or better. Life will always be complicated. Learn to be happy right now, and otherwise you'll run out of time. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.